Mr. Mervyn Reel 16. Did the enemy know where these listening posts were?
Well, I think that's a good idea, because we went out through the minefield, through the same gap, so he found our track going down. And mind, there was a lot of more shrubbery, a lot of it had been blasted away, like, but there was no tall trees like we have around here, like Scotch pine or the land here, like that. They were more like, not chestnut trees, hazelnut tree, which is like not a tree, it's a bush. There's a lot of bushes like that, and gossiping. It's probably because on the night you could see the glow worm, could see the little light float, just like cigarette end, going around, you know. But obviously, the had an idea where, but I mean, this place, the line had been stationary for a year, and so the patrols had been going out and sitting in more or less the same places. And for our part, I suppose we knew where theirs were. Not to say how to avoid them, but we had an idea where they were, and you weren't careful. But there was always, when battalions change over in the line, you get like the first time we were on 355, and the second time we were on 355, it was the first time we'd been on the left hand side. And therefore it was all strange to us. You know, they could say, when our advance party went in, and the Australians who were there, and our advance party went out with the Australians to the existing listening patrol places, and they would say, well, the Chinese are over there, but unless you actually see the exact place, you just know they're in that area. And so all the battalions change over, I don't know, every 3 weeks, every month. You've got strangers to, you know where the general locality was, I would imagine, you know.
And did they keep the same listening posts?
We did. You know, the Australians would see when it's talk about an advance party, there would be a corporal, maybe it's just a corporal from Templeton, would go in, and he would live with the as it was the Australians for a week. And he would go out on all the patrols that were in front of the immediate company, and he would find out off the Australians if the patrols are hearing a lot of noise or if they're being kicked off. Then he would get the general idea. And then on the night of the changeover, well, the wagons used to roll up the door with the little knights. He came up in the wagons, he jumped out the wagons and just says, follow the corporal, you know, and then the way just tailed on behind him. And he says, tell him there, so and so, and then you go in. And then the next night, he would go out and place the patrols, and then everybody would know where they were, you know, where they would pass on. Because you were out nearly, I must say every night, find out every night, but you were out 4 or 5 nights a week on patrol, and so you got to know where they were.
So there weren't listening patrols every night?
Yes.
There was every night.
I was just saying, each man wasn't out every night. He maybe spent 2 nights in the week in the trenches. But that didn't say he stopped in the trenches. You had to go up and mend the barbed wire on the minefields, and you had to do maintenance work, shall we say. But you weren't sitting out in no man's land listening, you know. But, I want to say out, I meant outside the minefield and in the valley, didn't you?
Were these constructed, these listening posts?
No, it was just anywhere. In fact, they were usually shambles, which had been enlarged. And we just squatted down them just to get below ground level. Because when it rained, they were used to fill the water. And you were sitting up the existing water. Okay, if things weren't bad, you sat on the top. But as soon as it started filling it all out like that, you just slid into the water and just sat there. In fact, there was one occasion when, like, the night when, it was the only night when we actually got into our trenches, this listening patrol, all the listening patrols got called in, except this one, the wireless wasn't working. And so it just sat there and it being pouring down the rain. And they just got off the top of the trenches, and wiped the little shells, and just slid into the water. And they just sat there, and the gun going out, the gun popped on the side. You could hear all the shouting and the shooting and everything going off. And the brain going, I heard a noise, and we turned around, there was a pretty big, it looked like a Mongolian, they were bigger than a Chinese, coming down. So whether this bloke was making away from the battle and building a runner, well, I don't know, but what we think was, he saw the lads sitting in the water and thought they were dead. Nobody like mine wanted to sit in the water. The brain going to kill them, you know. And that was it then. But no, he just sat in the water and that was it.
Did you do many yourself? Listening patrol?
Oh, just 4 times a week. Everybody was out on them. There was, like, cooks went out and class went out, you know. Every rifleman was out.
Come on and mention patrols in general later. But did you take part yourself in many listening posts? Were you out in
That was the main one. You did listening posts. That was obviously regular. Not out the ordinary. You used to do it was a fighting patrol, which says where it is. You go out down in the bottom of the valley and you make a noise and see how we're down another fight like. We used to go down and try and be quiet. But the Australians used to go down and shout at them, you know, come on down. And try to get them to come down out of fight. And then the other patrols were the ambush patrols. They used to know roughly where they were going, used to go and lay an ambush and hope that they would come down. And then, but everything just happened in about a minute, you know what I mean? Because okay, I was on the fighting tour, but nobody ever came down to fight, thank goodness. But the idea was that to get them to come down, have a quick firefight, and then you grab your wounded, you'd be dead, you'd throw them, and you ran back to your lines. And they did the same. But then used to call your artillery down. And the artillery would come on to where you were going in your lines, so that if they didn't kill you with weapons, the hope that the artillery would get you going in. And we hoped the same for them. The safest place was to stay where you were, because both the sailors were going over the top, you were in the middle, like they were going out of the side, but nobody grabbed my fist in the middle. That was the fighting patrol. The ambush patrol, well, it speaks for itself. You just wait for somebody came down and little stuff happened. And then once again, you got out of it as quick as you could. You know? But the listening patrol, it was a bread and butter one. You went out, you did more listening patrols than any of the other, and you were detailed when you went to bed on the morning, because it's all night work, there's no day shift, it's all night shift. You would say that you were out the next night round. Each place, each patrol had a name. One was Alice Springs, one was Cobram, this, that, and the other. You know, okay. I'm on Alice Springs tonight, and that was it. Well, whatever. But if your name wasn't on there, well, it meant that you were spending the night in the trench. But what happened then was when it came dark and everybody stood too, when it was all right, you said, right, go stand down, one of you would be left on guard and the other one that would want to work in detail and prepare the trench or do some work on the minefield or whatever.
Was there much harassing fire for these listening posts then?
No, not really.
From the enemy?
No, it was quiet. On some time, somewhere you went out, you never heard a thing. You just went out and that was it. We spent all night. The only worst thing was the mosquitoes used to knock you out, and it's lazy. Because, now we must be crap. As somebody at some time had taken a blanket out, and you should get your head under the blanket and have a smoke. And, now, when you realise, when I'm a non-smoker, you know, smell smoke over it. Aging on our name would be puffing away. If it was under blanket, I mean, if the Chinese were coming, would know that somewhere there, because it could smell the smoke. And you don't realise it was the time. And the blanket is as lucky as out, nobody's to get underneath and puff and puff away. But apart from that, a lot of the time, nothing happened. He was just there all night, nothing happened. You know, the biggest job was keeping him awake.
Who would be in charge then of a listening
corporal? It's very seldom sergeants and officers. Officers weren't supposed to work, really. I mean, their job was to organise stuff, and sergeants, a fighting patrol would never be an officer and a sergeant, but listening patrols was just anything else, just corporals. Maybe a corporal and four or five men, that would be it. Maybe just four men, you know. As I say, it just went out. We went out last night, and we got into where those controls were going, and then we just started to go down for the night, and we just sat there all night. And then you waited until it was time to come back in.
Could you say much?
Aye. Well, it depends how close the foliage was. And not, you could see somebody wandered around, you know. But the listening post wasn't really to see, it was to listen. It says, because you can hear people not thrashing through on the floor, but you can hear, no matter how quiet people are, you can, they usually stand on a tree or something, or you can hear something. And of course, if somebody hears something, you know, and then you all start listening. And you might never see them, but you hear them. And then the idea is that you wear these 88 sets, you phone in and say, we've got movement on our left. We reckon about 20 blokes. Now, another listening patrol is further along. They'll have had movement on their right, the same movement, and they'll maybe reckon 15 blokes. And they'll radio that in. And so the commander, the CO, he knows that there's 15 to 20 blokes down there that shouldn't be.
It must have been quite eerie, just sat in the dark, in the middle of no man's land, for want of a better expression, just listening.
That's it.
Did your ears ever play tricks with you?
Yeah, I did. You used to see trees starting to walk around and wave their hands at you and all sorts. Hearing, well, I mean, sometimes you hear animals moving around. And you've got to try and discern whether it's. But if there's four or five of you, you know, I mean, you don't all just sit together, you know, you spread out. You're within sight of each other, and you're within a whispering distance, shall we say. And so, you can have a little confab and say what you think, you know.
Well, that must have been quite difficult, because I guess if you could hear them.
Well, right, we'd see me sitting quiet. We're not making a noise. We're just sitting, listening. And then if you hear a noise, you're not going to say, oh! You know, you maybe just go a pebble over and see. And then, you know, and then hopefully it goes. I only saw them once, you know, but we heard them. And that was it.
Can you remember your first patrol?
Well, I used to listen to being scared stiff. But obviously, if you're out with that, so it was like water for this one.
What was that, the listening patrol?
Nine times out of ten, the listening patrol.
That was the most popular.
The most popular. And some people said that it was a good thing, which I don't know, it was a CEO's idea. But I would say it was about half of the manpower without being more manpower than a night than what was in the trench. CEO's idea was you hear them outside and you call your patrols and they get the artillery down and they all get killed before they get to the trenches. Now the Americans, they didn't have any instant patrols out, they just all stayed in the trenches where they were. Consequently, first thing they knew, they always said they didn't have a chance to get the artillery down on them, you see. It's just thoughts of where it went. But we had patrols out, and I suppose.
So that was the idea, if the listening patrols picked up any large movement was to get everybody back in as quickly as possible and then bring down the artillery.
You couldn't just come in yourself, you know. Like, there was one patrol here. As I say, the one night when we really got hit, we were out on a one on a listening patrol. And we could see them coming. And the cop was on the phone. And we only had Sten guns, there was 25 yards coming in, you know. And he says, I think rabbits was the name for the enemy, you know, so many, 50 rabbits or something coming towards us. You know, permission to come in. And we got, no. Oh, God, yes, I can't come in, you know. The enemy was sitting there, they were creeping away around, you know. But one of the reasons why we maybe told not to come in was because to get onto this, might seem the previous, to get onto this position where we were, for the listener before, the trench where you had to leave the trench system, it was up a height on the side of the hill. And they used to throw a rope out. And you used to go down the rope, then run across the top of some paddy buns, because there was a minefield on one side. Then we went out here, and there was the road, and that was the listening performance, and we sat there. Now, that rope was pulled in after you got out, and you couldn't get in without the rope. And so, if we just buggered off and come back along the top of the paddy bond without the lads in the trenches knowing, then we just shut us, you know. Because if we were coming in, we'd throw the rope out. But if some men just appeared, well, just got the grenades at my computer, you know. But it's sitting there, oh, I can't go in. So obviously the CEO was getting on another phone and saying, look, tell the outpost that the outpost's coming in. They're coming in early. It was one of the lads got shut down that night.
From the listening post?
Aye. And I wondered how he got up that rope with a shot in the arm. And then there's about 20 years later when I found out that one of the lads who was in the trenches came down the rope and gave him a hand up. I thought he must have got up there. But now, I'm on the rope. But that's what it was like, you know, you couldn't come in and you want to call, you had to be called in. And you used to have to say, first man would say, Cobra, the sentries, you know, 5 men, and you would count 5 men, or, you know, 4 men, whatever. Of course, it had been known for Chinese to have a man. But they had been known to come out at night, lying up all day underneath your trench, and then as the patrol's going out, shoot them all at the back of the morning.
Did you ever experience anything like that yourself?
No. It did happen while we were there, but then there was one of our lots, one of our patrols went out and they laid up all day in front of China and things. They didn't do it very often, but it was a thing that they had to be aware of, you know. As soon as you got out of the way, you were on edge.
How did it feel like then to be under attack like that? What were your feelings?
There's no amount of training can train you for the real thing, like, you know, and with bombs. I know when we were coming off this little wall to get up the wall, there was shells whistling around and bullets, and you were running, and then you were crawling on your belly, and you were trying to get under your hat, and you were running and crawling, and all at the same time, you know. There was one of the lads who, it was his turn to be in, and it was the same night, and it was the night that the guy had just 12 to turn over on 12 to turn. And this lad, he's a Chinaman, he's got behind him, and he was taken prisoner. And he was walking back. And one of the other lads saw him, and he shot. But the stand, they hit the Chinese lad, and he missed him, and he knocked the burp going out of his hand. And of course, the Chinese ran, and of course, Arthur, he dropped down into the trench, you know. He said, "Well, what do you think about Arthur when you're walking back to China?" Well, he says, "I'll take the rice for breakfast, rice for dinner, rice for tea." He says, "Oh," I said, "I'm pretty scared to see it, but everybody is, oh, but that's just the way things are, you know." We just, after it's all over, you just keep talking about it and you try to talk about it, it's not nice at the time. And we're all smokers then, you know, smokers cigarette after cigarette, you know, which is, and that night I had the, well, it was bad enough that they called, I think it was Air Company was in reserve, and they called Air Company. The air came down to where in the Air Company's positions to help out. And after that, where Air Company had been, their reserve position, it was taken over by the reserve company, the reserve battalion, which was Australian. And the reserve battalion was put on standby because one of the evening was going out, and just knew it was.
So you were attacked that night? When was that then?
That was right about coronation time.
Was that during your first tour in the trenches?
Second.
That was in your second tour in the trenches? Right. Well, we might come on to that in a little bit more detail later on. Did you do many fighting patrols then?
No, I didn't. There would be, I don't know how many went out in the time we were there, but I didn't go. I was out on ambush patrols, but nothing happened.
And how many men would it take place in an ambush patrol?
Oh, 15, 20.
Who would lead that then?
Sergeant or an officer.
What kind of weapons would you take with anything?
In fact, nearly every time I went out on patrol, I had more than money. You know. The night when we got hit, we should have had a brain on this, but when we were, before we were going out on patrol, the lad was going to have we got any oil? So we weren't parts. So I said, "I'll call in and get some on the way down off this lad." So it was a right one. We went in and the lads were sitting in the hutchings. "Aye, there's the oil." We put the oil on and then we just slammed the butt up. The main one needs to do, we forgot there's a magazine on. And it took a round up and it fired around in the hutching right through this lad's ankle. And well, that was it. We were on the morning and everybody was wounded or something like that. The lad with the brand gun, he was his mate. So he was, the corporal says, "Oh, well, I'll take him out with us tonight, he's no good, we'll leave him in." And of course, when we went down, we got hit with no brand gun. You know, I mean, a brand gun's a good gun. It'll kill it, it can't kill 100 yards. We only had stems, 25 yards. But,
yeah, it was more a close combat weapon, wasn't it?
It was the house cleaner, maybe. That's what it was designed for. Once again, the same night, on another listening patrol, it was caught on off course. This listening patrol had been hit on three or four nights in a row. The Chinese had come up the top and they'd had a little short firefight. And all the patrol had come back in and then pulled it off from that. Anyway, it was decided this night that they would man that this listening patrol and they made an ambush. But it was like in a hollow. And Lofthouse and I think it was three men went up on the top. But they didn't go into the places where they normally were. They sat back a bit. And they saw the Chinese come over the top. So I look at the hole, so there was nobody in. Then the wave, and some more lads, some more Chinese came up. And then Lofty opened up, and got quite a few of them. And then, of course, they ran like hell back. So the idea being that if they were chased, they would chase them through, and they'd chase them through the ambush, and the ambush would get them. But they had plenty that didn't come through, so the ambush never ambushed anyone. But lots of us got the NM for that night. That was that on that stint that we were in, that was the plan for now. There was no more patrol activity after that. That was their final shot at it, you know.
But this was your second stint, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was quiet after that. You know, we came, you know, pulled out about a week after that.
Going back to your first stint, how much patrolling did you do in that first stint in the trenches?
Not a lot. Three nights a week.
And how long were you in the front line that first time?
Wasn't long.
Yes, I think you relieved the second US
second
division.
Second time, we the first time we were on the, when I'm seeing the left hand, right hand side, it was a pretty good big clear, you know.
That was 0.355.
Yeah. And the right hand side, it was quite, you know, it was no problem. The left hand side, where we had the tour, was because the Chinese were looking downwards. We were on the high one. We were looking down on the Chinese, but the forward company was down below the height of the Chinese hill, and they were looking down on the forward company.
I take it that obviously the Chinese did a lot of patrolling as well.
Oh.
Was there much of fighting for dominance of the No Man's Land?
Yeah, aye. But we had it. So we'll put it this way. When the Americans were in, the Chinese had it. They were king of No Man's Land. Anyway, you let them have it. And when you went in, and we took over from them, you had to fight to gain dominance. Now, say the Australians here, they didn't give two rules for anybody. They were just always to ask for a fight. They didn't give two rules. They when we went there, we were quiet. Okay, if we hit anybody, well, you hit them, and a quick firefight, and then people out of it.
So when you took over from the line, did you really have to start again and sort of to tell them who was boss?
Not with the Australians, because they had that there.
They already had dominance.
Already had it.
So on that first stint, when you went into the trenches, you really had to start again, because you'd taken over from the Americans, hadn't you?
Yeah. It was pretty quiet. Yeah, we were on the left hand side. On the right hand side, it wasn't too bad, did it? But, of course, the ones who, as you say, dominated No Man's Land, if they were wanting to put an attack in, well, they had that much advantage, that they were nearer to their lines from the start line, you know, but they weren't. We were pretty touching. We were just happy to stay where we were. But see what was happening with the Chinese. The peace talks were going on all the time. And if they thought that they were making an impression in the line, they would call off the peace talks in case they broke through. No, we don't want this. We don't need peace. You know. And so you had to. You could see what they're thinking of. You know, okay, they had to go at this on 355. Okay, that night, if they'd managed to retain 12 companies, 12 battalions, and got all the big companies, they'd have broken off the peace talks, thinking that we're going to. Because it was the gateway to Seoul, it was a point to where Vietnam has come down, you know. And so they brought it off because it was like, we're winning it. We don't want to save the peace.